In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my Morlock, who's off fighting kaiju. The one, the only.
Oh, no. There goes Travio. I said Godzilla, 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 Godzilla. Oh, Travis Rat's here.
Welcome to Comic Exposure, where Travis and I dig deep into graphic novels or trades on our comic book club episodes. Sometimes we wax poetic about what's going on in the world of nerddom. You, my friends, are on a comic book club episode, and we welcome you to join us in this trip, this wild adventure that Travis and I are on today, as we read Tom Scully's Godzilla's Masterpiece Theater, featuring the Time Machinist, the Great Gatsby, and Sherlock Holmes. It's all on the cover of this ridiculous book that we read. It's out on IDW, right? Yeah, IDW. And it's all Scully, Tom, art, and our story, art, and letters, all done by Tom. Tom is the indie of indie creators. Didn't he do some of the Ed Piskor is the one who did the hip hop one, right?
Hip hop and the X-Men and the Fantastic. Yeah. Josh, you will notice that we started this podcast and I did not have a hat on. But yeah. I saw you had a hat on. I put a hat on because Scully,
yeah,
with his artwork, almost blew my head off.
It is.
I had to put a hat on to contain it.
I get it. Contained. It was gonna. It blew your hair back. The art in this book blew your hair back.
Blew my head off. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Blew your hair back. And so we read this book. And Travis, have we ever done a Godzilla book for the show? I don't think so.
I was trying. We did that Kaiju Max book, which was great. And like, I got a little. It's too dark right now, but I got a little Godzilla print somewhere here.
Yeah.
And you're a big Godzilla. Actually, you might be the person who got me to go and take a second look at Godzilla. I did a big COVID Godzilla rewatch where I watched like the first like 6 Godzillas in a row when everyone was watching, like giving like watchathons on things they wanted to watch. I did Bond and Godzilla.
There you go. And, they're very time. You know, that's who could have shown up in this book was James Bond. And it would have, I wouldn't have batted an eyelash at James Bond.
Yeah, we're going to talk, we will talk about the randomness of the selection of historical figures later. But I know that you have a maybe more of a long, I'm actually kind of curious to your history of Godzilla. Because I know you're making like student lessons around Godzilla and the economy and stuff like that. So
I have a love for like Japanese monster movies that I can't explain. Right. I'm not a guy who's into anime. The few mangas I've read, I think have been for this show. Right. And you know, but there's something about giant monsters, and I just have a soft spot for it. So even the like the American remakes that we just did of like Godzilla X Kong and all that, just I think I'm a lover of popcorn flicks, right? And save for like the first couple of Godzilla, like where that first Godzilla movie is like, oh, it's pretty serious. It's like telling you like it's a sort of like it's a tale for a reason, right? But Godzilla just becomes like, you know, the Jaguar guy and Godzilla and baby Godzilla and all of these weird things and King Ghidorah and then Godzilla from space. And it just gets super weird. And there's something, I don't know what it is. If I just love the weird rubber costumes or what, there's just something like wholesome about how goofy and like, yeah, we know it's a rubber suit, but we don't care. This is what we're doing. This is that, you know, like, I don't know. There's something great about it. They just did, if you didn't watch Shin Godzilla or Godzilla minus what is the zero, whatever it is that just,
yeah, that's the one. I watched that one. That was, I was really looking for that one. I watched it and I quite enjoyed that. I didn't, yeah. I don't think I've watched Shin Godzilla yet, but it was on my list. But Godzilla Minus One.
One, yeah.
I did watch, and with the guy who survives, like, and then he has to go back out the
Kamikaze
there.
Kamikaze Closet, it's like, pilot, right?
Yeah. You know, post-World War II, or Tokyo, where it's all destroyed, and like he has to go, and you see it built up again. I thought that was a fantastic film.
Yeah,
it sounds like you like the kitschiness of Godzilla.
I do. It's probably the same reason that I like Barbarian movies and like 60s Batman. There's just the camp of it. I'm okay. Like,
have you ever thought about like the original Godzilla, like what in the 60s or whatever it is, 50, in Toho,
54 or something like that? The original
54, it's pretty old. Have you thought about that in the sense of it's super kitschy now, even though it's like it still hits like politically and like, oh, this is like a man-made monster. But if you were like place yourself like in a theater like 1956, you're in Tokyo, Japan, you're going to a moving picture, and then this thing pops up, this big rubber monster pops up there. I always think about like you can't separate yourself from, you know, seeing it today, right. But like I wonder if that time you're like, that's just like Freddy Krueger, man. That's right? like Freddy Krueger real scary.
That's some real stuff, right? I mean, I bet you it just played more real than it does now. But I just have this soft spot for Godzilla. And then when I saw, and I love Tom Scioli, he's just got his art's great. I mean, it's not commercial, right? You're not going to put it on any normal book. So he does really well on these very indie things that he creates. You know, he's a creator. He did that Fantastic Four grand design. Was Tom Scioli did that. Pisker is the one who did Grand Design. Yeah. But they have this very similar kind of vibe between them. It's just like the indie man's indie comic book. And so I was like, okay, he's doing this.
It's like your dad's section of the Sunday Funnies.
Yeah, yeah. And saw just the idea that this is a book that has Gatsby fighting Godzilla with the help of Sherlock Holmes and
the time machinist, Dracula,
and the 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea guy,
Jules Verne,
Frankenstein,
Frankenstein, the mummy, werewolves.
It's
real heavy on the classic movie monsters there in the third act, but God, there's one more we're missing, I feel like. Maybe that's it. Yeah.
Well, it's just what's her name from Godzilla 2, or what's her name from Great Gatsby 2? His Daisy, right?
Daisy. Tom Buchanan are, there's a lot of, it's heavy on the Gatsby and heavy on the classic Universal monsters.
Yeah. So it's this weird, and it's this weird mix. And I kind of want to talk about that. So this story, it's off the rails, right? Essentially, it starts like Great Gatsby. And so as an English teacher, Travis, have you read The Great Gatsby?
Of course. Many times.
I'm assuming it feels like there are lines early on in this that are taken directly from the novel. Yeah. And it feels like
beating on back into the current is the famous last line on there.
Yeah. And so it is this weird thing. So as you started reading, and I said, Travis, I want you to read this Godzilla book. It's got Great Gatsby in it. As this starts to unfold.
And I said, no, I'm not going to, Josh. And you said, we do a podcast of comics. And I said, oh, okay. I'll read it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do it. So tell me, like, what are your thoughts as you're reading this thing, as it starts to unfold, what it is and what's happening?
Well, you kind of you spoil it for me a little bit in pitching it to me, and I think you kind of have to, right? If you're gonna get someone to read 140 pages, which it's a quick read, but you kind of have to be like the reason the kitschy, like I use that word kitschy earlier, but we're talking about kitschy Godzilla, not like Godzilla Minus One or any kind of new like take on Godzilla, and So you sold me with the premise, and then I opened the page of my digital reader. I'm like, oh, this art is fantastic.
Right.
And then, especially in the first act of this book, and I'm saying act not to be pretentious. They break this book down into, they call it three acts.
Yeah.
And they'll be like act one, act two, act three. And you're getting Gatsby language, right?
Yeah.
And to me, as an English teacher, that really struck me, or not even an English teacher, but just someone, you know, who remembers reading those books in high school. Everyone has to read The Great Gatsby at some point.
Yeah.
And I think there are a few writers in classic literary fashion that they have a very unique voice, and it's very hard as a young reader not to try to mimic that voice. So, for example, we read Gatsby. I was like, for 2 months after anything I wrote, it sounded like F. Scott Fitzgerald. Hunter S. Thompson is another one too. If you read like Fear and Loathing Las Vegas for the next 2 months, anything you write comes out like you're writing. You're like the crest of the high wave of millennial culture. And you're like this. Hemingway is another one with the short periodic sentences. So it was really fun seeing someone who may have fallen into that same literary mimic camp, just have fun with like, okay, I'm going to use some of a Fitzgerald's language from The Great Gatsby, but then I'm also going to take it and run with it and put it into the context of Godzilla. And those were some of my favorite word moments in this book.
Right. It's this really interesting idea. So essentially, you know, Gatsby, it does start just like Gatsby. He is with Daisy. He goes off to war. He comes back. He builds the mansion. He has these parties right across the river.
Yeah, set in East Egg. Yeah.
Yeah. And Godzilla shows up to terrorize the party. And Gatsby goes to try to save Daisy in a speedboat. All the things go wrong, right? Like all of this stuff happens. Godzilla.
It sounds ridiculous when you're saying it, but like I've read the book, so they somehow make it sequential.
Yes, right. Like Godzilla is chasing them in the speedboat. There's a car crash, the whole nine yards in this thing, right? Like, and then they end up in San Francisco. Godzilla attacks San Francisco. They run into Thomas Edison, but first he starts the Jay Gatsby and the G-Force, right? So G-Force is a real thing from the Godzilla universe. It's the Godzilla Force. That's like the UN, but for fighting Godzilla, right? So it's a thing. And so he is taking this love of classic literature and this like love for Godzilla, and he's smushing them together in this just hilarious way where all of a sudden he's running into, you know, other writers. Like that's the weird, he's running into Thomas Edison. And then he runs
That's the one we missed. Yeah.
He runs into Jules Verne. And then somehow Dracula's involved, and he gives an amulet to like that controls or gives power to Daisy, and Daisy turns everybody into a giant monster, and the whole book ends. And I don't even know how to go with the story in this, but the whole book ends with like Frankenstein, a giant werewolf, a giant mummy, a giant Frankenstein fighting Godzilla. And then a giant Dracula joins the fight.
And a giant Great Gatsby.
And then
you get the classic line, the Great Gatsby.
He has truly become the great Gatsby.
And Josh, I really like the way you say werewolf. Can you say it again?
Werewolf?
Yeah. Oh, out of context, you were just like, you weren't pronouncing it wrong, but you're just like, there's a Frankenstein, there's a werewolf. I was like,
it's just bizarre. It doesn't meander. I think that's the thing. I think that this book is off the rails. It's weird. I don't know that it's the best written thing ever, but it's a romp, right? It's goofy. The art's great. And although all of those things I just said make it seem like it's all over the place, it is not. This thing is this thing is a very like, we're going to do this and this leads to this and this leads, you know, it's literally
like the premise is, what if Godzilla interrupted the first act of Great Gatsby?
Yeah,
that's it. You know, yeah. And then it just grows in absurdity from there. And at first, in the first act of this comic, there's an attempt to like, oh, we're going to be mixing highbrow and lowbrow. Like for a moment, you think that's what the book is for the first kind of inciting incident of the East-West Egg boat chase. And then you're like, once like Thomas Edison comes in and go like, oh no, we like to use your parlance, we are just off the rails at this point. And so at first I was like, okay, this is cool. It reminds me of, Josh, remember when like years ago, I'm sure they've done this hundreds of times and I might just be out of this genre, but when they did like Pride and Prejudice
and zombies, right? Yeah.
This does feel like that. So what do you think, Josh, about this type of genre of storytelling where we're going to take a classic book or classic books, and then we're going to drop some schlock horror in there, like Pride and Prejudice and zombies or things like that.
Yeah. I think what it lets you do is it, so we could talk about like, if you're having writer's block,
if you're having writer's block, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 podcasts and
Yeah, take yourself some Gatsby and throw a kaiju in, right? Like, I think like if you're dealing with writer's block, this might be a way to go like, let's just add, here's an established thing.
Mm.
So many people know it. How can I screw with it? Right? Like, what can I do? Like every character gets pulled in here. The we know who Sherlock Holmes is. Right. We have all these. You don't have to build the character. We know who he is. Like we know the books that Jules Verne has written. So you can go like, OK, let's make him a real character who is really this science. Like, you know what I mean? Like we have you have these established things. So you don't have
guessing even though he's a time machinist, we're supposed to be like, that's H.G. Wells. Like the author kind of like,
it's the guy from the time.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, yeah. At first, you're like, oh, it fits into the rhythm of it being like classic character. Oh, anyways, yeah. Because I want to talk about what he's pulling in a little bit, but go ahead.
And so for me, I think as an author, maybe it just lets you go like, here's this established thing. Let's play with it. Let's goof around with it. And in reality, you and I both like, what sells? There's a reason why everything's a sequel. There's a reason why people go with the things they already know. So just the absurdity of this concept, like you look at the cover and the cover literally has featuring the time machinist, the Great Gatsby and Sherlock Holmes. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I know Godzilla. I know those characters. Let's put them in a blender and see what happens. Right. Like there's just something just inherently sort of like you can glom onto.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What do you think about that? Why do you think an author would do that? Or what's your?
I think you're dead on in the sense of, I don't know if it originally got created out of writer's block, but that is a good tool to use if you're like sitting down and doing your 30 minutes to 2 hours of daily writing, right? And you come across like a lull, like, hey, what if I throw something into this? But I think,
does it start as an exercise that goes wild? You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe where the genre started from. I really have no clue, but I can imagine that being like, let me take the first three chapters of Pride and Prejudice and then let me throw zombies in there. It is kind of a fun, interesting exercise, but, more to the point on here, I think it's a creative or a silly exploration of tone, right?
Yeah.
It's the idea it's almost like a bunch of punks walking into a high society party. And like, it's the beginning of, you got to fight for the right to party by Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like these hoity toity people. And then it's just like a bunch of just like proletariat.
Yeah.
Bourgeois coming in and just turning the party over. And there's something fun with seeing pop culture molest the academia.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. There's that fun play on that, right?
Molest probably isn't the right word.
No, but I bastardize whatever.
You yeah, know bastardize I mean, like, that. There is something that feels very like now it's a party. Now we're talking Godzilla's here. that I think for comic book writers, especially who through their art style have a love of the kind of classic style of comic book art.
Yeah.
Coming in and being like, well, I can do the old Dick Tracy style stuff. I can do what people consider to be, you know,
classic, right?
Dated. Yeah. Dated comic book art. So what if I put dated literary tropes in there, but then just stir it around with some Godzilla? And by God, if he doesn't do it, and we're purposely staying away from art, because I think this might be an episode where we're 20 minutes in and we talk more about the art coming up than the actual story, because that is
that's the driving
factor. This is fantastic,
right?
Josh.
I mean, we often talk about like, man, I'd really like some original art from some of the stuff we've read, but there are some pages in here that if I could just get them blown up and on my wall, cheap. There's just some full page spreads of Godzilla that are fantastic. There's one.
Did you read this in print or in digital?
I have it print.
God damn it, Josh.
So I have it in print, and I had to, because look at this.
Yeah, I know. I'm reading this and I'm like, this is fantastic. And even looking at the print, the colors are fantastic. That color actually on there. So I was, because if you read it in digital, I was going to ask you, Josh, did you find yourself doing digital bookmarks more in this book than you've done in previous books? Because some books I'm like, oh, I'm not going to remember this. I got to put this down. And I threw out so many digital bookmarks in this book where I'm like, oh, this is fantastic. Oh, no. This is fantastic.
So hit me with some of your bookmarks. What are some of the things that art-wise that Scioli did and you're like, oh, man, that's great. I love it.
For saving some time here, I really love one of the things that I thought was really clever was Location 23 in the digital reader. where they have the train car.
Yes.
It's a big train car. And I love the pages where he just uses two colors. He does a couple. There's like a Dracula Sherlock one later on, which I just talked about it. But it's like red and blue or red and green on here, depending on, I guess, if you bought a hard copy or you're reading digital. And it's just Godzilla's hand with his train car. And then the right side of the page is filled with panels. The first panel is tilted because the people are being tilted. And then the last two panels, you see the teeth coming into the car. And I just thought you hear a roar, which separates the panel. I mean, there's just so – this page itself is like a masterclass on creative paneling and – onomatopoeia and horror, but like funny, because Godzilla is funny. Do you agree, Josh?
Yes.
Godzilla winks at the camera so much in this book that it is great.
Yeah, there's this, I feel like there's all these little pieces that, because it's drawn, right, you get to kind of do these goofier things that maybe you wouldn't do, right? Like Godzilla grabbing the submarine and the sound ray coming out and shooting him in the face. And, you know, like,
how about the Eiffel Tower?
Yes.
It's like X-rayed electric shocked.
Yes. Like the electric shock, and you get to see all his little bones, right? It's like, there's just, it's ridiculous. And you know,
you laugh just to you holding it up.
It's just so silly. He breaks pyramids in half. And that's, of course, what causes the mummy to come after him, right? Like, that's the best part. Is like, no, he's cursed now. Godzilla's been cursed by a mummy. Because
like, the mummy will curse anyone who disturbs his tomb. They're like, why didn't he attack us? Well, we didn't disturb his tomb.
Right? Like, the mummy's on his way just to go chase Godzilla. And like, it is so goofy. And the art, and it works because of the art. Like, I don't think this works if it doesn't have this weird, wacky style to it. Right? Like,
well, you're right. And but here is the rub, because I think some people might be like, oh, I can do some doodles and sketches. I can probably do like, I can like draw someone and call him Great Gatsby and draw like monsters on some pages. No, this is, the story is a wink. It's right. It's a real wink into your face, but the art and is the craft. Masterful. The, right? Yes. The craft. Right. The craft, not just like his art style. Obviously, he has a style, and artists have style. And so you're like, well, he's just doing his style. But he's not, this isn't a throwaway. Those no. panels are constructed to the letter, you yeah. know, as far as what's happening in those. So it becomes not just a fun story romp with some great art, but it becomes like, what's this guy got next? What clever tricks does he have up his bag that I'm going to see where he can sell a joke with a panel right. or, you know, punctuate a cliffhanger with an expression.
Right. Or like, I mean, there's a panel in here where they're in Dracula's castle. Right. And you just see Gatsby running around the castle, and it's this giant, just this giant page where we've, you know, cross-sected the castle, and you see him running around it. And then the next page is again one of those pages, right? It's one of those pages where he splits, you have these two long panels on either side, and then the sequencing happens in between as it drops from top to bottom, and you get the embrace of Daisy and, you know, Jay Gatsby, and then they start like kissing and everything, and then Daisy's boyfriend comes in, and the whole, like, it's this whole, like, we just talked about this in Cali, where the pacing is something you can only do in comics, right? Sometimes, you know, we think about that 16 panel, you know, Frank Miller styling then you get Tom King becomes a master at writing that, as like his books have that kind of style that he goes through over and over again, or that eight panel grid over and over. Scully is doing that in this book with the goofiest stuff. Like, he spares no, he's not letting the silliness of this or the goofiness of it deter him from really doing comics. Yeah. Right? Like, the sequence and the storytelling is fantastic. Although his, you know, his style is cartoony, he's able to show emotion on these people's faces very well. You get to see, you know, all of these bits and pieces, all of these like goofy things that he's doing. He spares nothing in order to make it happen. Mm. The coloring is off the wall, man. It is so good. There are panels that are just all red and white, or panels. Yeah,
it feels very like 80s t-shirt coloring, like where like those great t-shirts that you can only like get vintage, versus the plain white tee. And then they have like the tricolor coloring, and they have, oh, we can only do 16 colors on this whole t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he has a palette of 16 colors that are all like vintagey colors, and that's what he just uses.
Yeah, there's like pinks and blues and reds and yellows, but like, and I think the other thing for me is, this is, you know, we talk a lot about one of the things that where we kind of get irritated by is when colorists do that gradient thing that happened in the early 2000s. I love this because it's all flat. Right.
Yeah.
And if he wants
flat coloring,
if he wants to give you shade, if he wants to give you shading, the shading is with another flat color, or it's with the a more watercolory line that he's added to it, or pencily line that he's added to the art to create that depth. So it looks like old Archie books, or it looks like old Dick Tracy, or, you know, I've
Garfield.
I've got some old Tintin, right?
It's Sunday Funnies color.
Yeah, there's more color in the Tintin book, but it's that style is so evocative of my youth and Family Circus and Beetle Bailey, and just, you know, like, well, we can't print that much color with these, or like,
Are your pages the white backgrounds? Are they more cream?
Yes,
in the panels.
Yeah, very creamy.
I was seeing that on the digital reader, and that would look really nice. I feel like in print is just having the white pages be cream. I mean, you know,
it almost looks like newsprint, right? Like that's the vibe it's giving off, as like, oh, this was printed on newspaper.
Yeah,
right.
That it does. Cream, it feels like a Sunday Funnies. Yeah,
yeah. I just. The art's great. The coloring is great. It's so goofy. And do I remember all of the dialogue no, that's not the point.
So the mechanics of comics are just so on point here in a way that is not pretentious, but still very master craftsman. The character motivations and the plot, even with the conceit is fun. I think they could have grouped it more as like, are we just doing writers? But then we bring in like scientists, and then like Jules Verne, like he was a writer, but now we have him.
He's a cyborg. Jules Verne is a cyborg.
Yeah. And that's kind of fine, because then you can accept all the classic monsters at the end. But I will say, you know, there are points where like the Daisy Buchanan plot line, you're just like, oh, that's just like a red herring, or like we're just kind of putting that. Like, if you're looking for character development and motivation, this is not the book.
No,
you're just like, I can't believe Jules Verne said that and turned the page. Oh, now it's Thomas Edison. It's about surprises, disguises, and pies of all sizes.
So let's talk about the characters that he brings in. Who is your favorite sort of like addition to this G-Force? Because it starts out at first.
Sherlock Holmes.
I was going to say, it seems like at first, like he's writing this book, like Gatsby's getting the team together, right? But then that stops happening, and it kind of takes a different turn. But that idea, that first part of him, like, ooh, I got to gather the team. You like Sherlock the best?
Yeah, I do.
Old man Sherlock, too. Like, yeah,
exactly. Old man Sherlock captured my heart when Dracula is talking about, like, how Van Helsing tried to kill him. And then by the end of that page, Sherlock's got his little walking stick and he's trying to stab it in Dracula's heart.
Right.
It's just like, he's like, doesn't think about it. He goes, okay, well, that's how you kill you. Here we go. And then he ends up being turned into a vampire himself, which is kind of fun on there. I do like Sherlock. I mean, all of them are pretty good, man. Maybe Thomas Edison, I feel like he only gets like a cameo. And
yeah, he was pretty throwaway. I like Jules Verne. I like
the heart of gold.
Cyborg Jules Verne, and like, oh yeah, no, I've got a submarine. Like, let's get on the submarine. Let's go do, you know what I mean? And the time machinist is funny. Like, he shows up and he goes like, man, I got to help you stop this, because if we don't, like, Godzilla's going to destroy everything, right? Like, this, it's so goofy. The ending, Let's just talk about the art and the ending and sort of put a bow on the goofiness of this. I mentioned it already, but it turns into a battle royale of universal monsters, Godzilla versus a giant Great Gatsby.
Let me count them up. Yes. So we have first, let's see if I can remember the order. So first is Godzilla versus Mummy, then Godzilla versus Werewolf, then Godzilla versus Dracula, then Frankenstein, then Dracula. And so Godzilla is taking down four giant universal monsters.
Yes.
It's only when Jay Gatsby gets giant that the fight really takes off.
And he looks
like He-Man.
Oh God, it's so great. Like the giant, just that page.
The haircut,
it's so good. It's so.
And all of a sudden, he can't talk. He's like Daisy.
Yes, as he's fighting, literally Godzilla versus the Great Gatsby, and it's a wrestling match. And Dr. Baron von Frankenstein, Gatsby takes the radiation blast from Godzilla and manages to walk up to him and close Godzilla's mouth so he explodes from the radiation. It is so ridiculous that the ending, I'm just the goofiness of it to go okay, I'm going to start it with this very literary thing where it's weird. It's Great Gatsby and Godzilla shows up, but I'm not going to stick to that plot. Right. I'm going to take it farther, and then I'm going to throw you in some Jules Verne and some Sherlock Holmes. But another classic thing was, Dracula. So Bram Stoker's let's go do that. Right. Let's throw that in here. And it is so bizarre that it just works. I don't know that I would have enjoyed it as much had it just been Gatsby. And how do you fit Godzilla into Gatsby? I was thinking about that
in the exposition. I was reading it. It's all Gatsby. I'm like, oh, can I do this for another 100 pages? And there is something where maybe you could get more character motivation flushed out of there. But the wild ride that we went on and just seeing these giant universal monsters just slugging out with Godzilla. And we talk about this, the art. I just love Godzilla in this. Just his Godzilla's expressions where he's almost like a petulant child or like a curious child at sometimes where he's just kind of like, hey, what's up?
I'm gonna step on this thing.
You guys in a submarine here? Oh, cool. Yeah. Cool.
Looking at it.
Let me grab it. Let me play with it a little bit. Okay, I'm done with that. Okay, cool. Let's move on. He's just so endearing, Godzilla's expressions in art. It makes Gatsby look like a real a-hole.
There's a scene where his foot goes through the Arc de Triomphe. And they've made it a booby trap. So it spins him around. And the Kermit the Frog Muppet looking face of Godzilla as he's spinning in circles. It's so
when that happened, immediately what went through my head was when he was spinning, I'm like, spin it again.
It's so goofy and so wonderful. It really is. It was a dumb, fun ride. I think more than anything else, if you're a fan of Tom Scully's art, read it, check it out. It's an IDW book. Those books have a tendency to, they fly under the radar. It's a Godzilla book. Are there people clamoring to find Godzilla books? The only thing I wish is, my Fantastic Four Grand Design book is oversized. The only thing that would have made this even better.
Oversize it.
A big, dumb, oversized.
A Godzilla size.
Right? Godzilla size it. Hey, IDW, if you're listening, there it is right there. Godzilla
size. Do 400 Godzilla sizes of it. Just run it. I know you have to go to a separate company because they don't do the oversized thing, I'm sure. So you got to outsource. It's worth it. 400 just from a man, Josh. He just wants to go Godzilla size.
I just want one. And do I need it? No.
He'll get his money twice. He bought it on the. He bought the actual book. Yeah,
you're gonna get my money twice. That's what this is. It comes down to you're gonna get my money twice.
Twicezilla.
So Travis, last question: if you could put Godzilla in any classic piece of literature that you've taught or have read, what would it be?
It's so great. And it does require almost a pitch club, but I, just off the top of my head, I'm just going to go with the one that I have, the book that I have read the most with students, Of Mice and Men, Of Mice and Godzilla.
How do you shoehorn Godzilla into Of Mice and Men?
I I will see. Here's the thing. George is just so protective of Lenny, and that whole book is him trying to navigate, you know, Lenny around.
So
just regular society. And
does he become the minder for Godzilla? Is he,
I think, a giant Lenny versus Godzilla, although it might have some issues with how the public receives that. I think that's how you go. We're finally in a world where everything is chaos and everything is out of line. Having Lenny is not a burden. It's a blessing. Let's bless him up and fight Godzilla.
All right.
How about you, Josh?
I get behind that. I mean, so let's be honest. My classic literature reading is not great, right?
Not Great Gatsby.
I mean, I don't know that I ever read Great Gatsby, right? I did read Pride and Prejudice. I did read, you know, Little Women. I did read
Little Women and Godzilla.
That might
Little
work.
Women, Big Godzilla. Little Women, Big Kaiju.
Little Women, Big Kaiju. Big Women is what I'd call it. Big Women.
There we go. You know what? I think you keep going. Big Women.
Big Women.
One of them falls into an ice skating rink, and then out of that pond, Godzilla's face emerges.
Yeah, it'd be perfect. Or I think, like, you know, just could you do something with what's the goddamn phony?
Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, Catcher in the Rye. He's
that would actually spice things up a little bit. Holden Caulfield, just like narrating like Godzilla. So Godzilla attacked the city today. Big phony. That would be good, Josh.
That might just the Holden Caulfield like narration over it might be good. And he's not chasing ducks. Maybe Godzilla is chasing the ducks, you know.
It's like a hipster like watching everyone's so into Godzilla right now, but like I was like they weren't like talking to me when I was talking about like King Kong like 3 months ago, but now everyone's in the Godzilla and they're a bunch of phonies.
I mean, it'd be great. That might do it right there. Just a goofy take on it destroys his city and what's his take on it, right? So you could literally use a bunch of his dialogue from the book, but replace things with Godzilla. I think that mm-hmm. would be my dumb choice for that. So, folks, thanks for tuning in. Go check out this book at IDW. Tom Scioli, Godzilla's Monster Peace Theater. Featuring The Time Machinist, The Great Gatsby, and Sherlock Holmes. And just the art alone is worth your attention. Just go flip through the pages and love it. It's beautiful. Travis, this has been we've read some weird, like the genre, this is like the cap on our genre tube of toothpaste. If we have read like a interdimensional weird book, like sci-fi book.
Yeah, a
Mad Max
dystopian.
Dystopian revenge tale. And now we've read actual genre as we've pulled literature into Godzilla and created something wholly weird with it.
It might be, you could argue it's the anti-genre, right? If we're looking at like literature, right? And then smashing genre into literature. It's what happens when you smash genre into literature. Yeah.
I like it. So
we probably should start the conversation with that, but it's okay. We're here at the end. We got to it.
So folks, I believe this should wrap up or kick off however you want to.
We're in the spooky season now, buddy. Now it's the end of the Godzilla episode. Listen to that.
It's officially spooky season. You know what's happening?
I know because I have a fall cold.
Do you hear that ghost? There's that. Just kicked on. It is officially spooky season. We are reading some spooky books. We're going to nail down those books. I think we shared some information back and forth with one another. We got to put a stamp on what the books are we're reading. We've got two spooky books for you for October. We're going to have our spooky yearly guest on to do spooky books with us. Andrea will be joining us for spooky book season. The cryptid queen herself. Not crypto queen, cryptid.
I always mess that up.
Spooky season. And then Noir November, Travis Ratz.
Which is a thing we are calling this November. We cannot guarantee it's going to happen in future Novembers, but it seems like it seems like an easy thing to
this November Noir November is happening. So spooky season with some spooky books in October, some noir books in November, and then December is just stuffing your stockings and
we can't make everything. We could easily do a DC December, but we're not going to do it because we're not just going to theme out every month because that takes too much planning.
It does. It does. So thanks for tuning in.
We'll stuff your stockings.
Yeah, we'll stuff your stockings. You can find all of our episodes over at comicexposure.com or on your favorite podcast app. Write a review, rate it, whatever. Travis, I want to end with this. Can I end with this? We talked about, hey, comment on the, you should really comment on our episodes on Spotify. So we had a couple Spotify messages. So we got one come in from, it's Bren Jack, kind of left us a comment. Great episode. Love the nostalgic look back. This was our episode on, why can't I, Grommets?
Transformers?
No, oh, I think it was Grommets. Yeah, Grommets, y'all need to check out Homesick Pilots for a spooky season read. 90s punk rock band, giant walking haunted houses. I did look at it. It looks weird. It looks weird, my friend. Mm-hmm. The other one.
We're not afraid of weird.
No, we're not. And another comment came from our episode. It's a really old one where we talked about, but hey, we're finally looking at the comments. We had Dark Knight with a Y. Comment on our Transformers episode and said, hey, I own the paperbacks of both volumes 1 and 2. The art is definitely more awesome than any online version. I loved it.
We agree. That book, I remember Optimus Prime doing like an uppercut as a truck.
Yes.
I was like, it's still burned in my brain. Like burned that, in your that brain. Panel or just like, so good. Ooh, that's yes. cool.
So, hey, comment on the Spotify and maybe you too could have your comment
more
right
than
show.
Spotify.
That's right. All right, folks, we'll see you next trade.